From the Bronx, New York, it's Latin jazz percussionist Bobby Matos and his Afro-Latin jazz ensemble with Miles Davis's All Blues. This is from his 2006 album, Gratitude. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we begin another week, hopefully not nearly as crazy as last week. But I'm just keeping my fingers crossed because, you know, sometimes you hope for things and they never happen. Let's hope this is not one of those times. More than 1,000 people on Saturday attended a private funeral service for Army Sergeant LaDavid Johnson at Christ the Rock Church in South Florida. Johnson was one of four soldiers in a 12-man unit who were killed in Niger in an October the 4th ambush, presumably carried out by ISIS-affiliated forces. His body was not recovered for 2 days. The soldiers' deaths, and especially that of Johnson, have touched off an open battle with President Trump and his administration over alleged secret deployments of U.S. troops and flouting the War Powers Act, bypassing consent of Congress in matters of war. So we'll talk about that today. What you are thinking about how this news came to us, what it triggered in us, what questions we're asking, what troubles us about this. And we'll also be talking about the treatment that Johnson's grieving family received from the president and his chief of staff, General John F. Kelly. War is not pretty, and this kind of war is a special kind of war. It's a war against terrorism. It's not your basic one country disagrees with another country and they fight it out and you expect to have a lot of killing going on. They designate a place where the war, or an arena in which this war will be fought, and it ends with a win for one side or the other, or there is some kind of an armistice worked out where both sides agree to stop warring and come to some amicable conclusion or workable plan where coexistence is possible, even if it comes with people living on both sides with tensions. As you can see, we have a war brewing. We don't know what is going to happen, but for all intents, the U.S. and North Korea are showing all the signs of, you know, the rattling of swords, getting ready for war. And if there is one, it will be a very nasty one because it would involve nuclear arms. But what do you think came out of this knowledge that we were given the knowledge that this group, this military group, U.S. military group, was attached to this special unit, but we didn't know about it. We, the people, knew nothing about it. Congress seemed not to know much about it. And it seemed as if they had been operating in Niger for quite some time with specific objectives relating to the war on terrorism. I'm not sure that members of Congress seem to have been apprised or were asked, as they are supposed to be asked, by the president, by every president that is involved in some kind of war. They are supposed to come to the Congress and make the case for assigning troops wherever they are to be assigned. I am not sure that that was a procedure that President Trump followed. So I'll take your calls and we'll talk about this a bit because this is important. We still do not know all that we need to know. The information that so far has been shared by the media, of course, all comes out of the military, so we don't know quite what to believe or what is true. Some information leaked out. We still don't know because that information, too, comes in a roundabout way from the Department of Defense and other military organizations within the government. So we don't know. But we do know that this is a troubling thing. We do know that. And we do know that we are uncomfortable whenever we read about people, soldiers, who have no say in where they are appointed. They're just sent to a particular area. They have to go. And we know that they go under orders. Aside from Staff Sergeant Johnson, we have Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Johnson, Staff Sergeant Brian Black, Staff Sergeant Dustin Wright, who also were ordered to perform a military service at that area. We still don't know quite yet what the area is in Niger. I was very sad over this weekend about this. These are young men. In fact, LeDavid Johnson was just beginning his life, you could say, as a husband and father, and was the youngest member of this group to be killed. And of course, you think about Vietnam all over again. Here he is, he's killed. His body is somewhere. And it takes 2 days just about to find him and bring him home. What do you think about the conduct of our government with regard to war? We understand that most all countries, in one way or the other, in the name of defense, are prepared to go to war. But we also have something, no matter how flimsy it is, that reflects the people's thinking and feeling about involvement in war, because there is a long and dreadful history of repeated tragedies and a waste of life, all in the name of some flimsy boast that we have the best of everything. We win all wars. It's about winning. We win all wars. Of course, we note that the majority of the people doing the dying are not poor. They're not from poor families. They leave the fighting and the dying to poor families. They're rich. They can get deferments. They can dodge the draft, as the president has 5 times. And they can do all kinds of things. They could make phone calls to get out of serving. And of course, it's so ironic because many of the photos we see now of Donald Trump, he's literally wrapping himself in the flag. He hadn't served one day in uniform. Same with Barack Obama. Same with Donald Trump's sons. They're not going to war. But it is the sons of working class and poor families. The sons and daughters. I should not forget to mention that. They can go to war. They can die. They're expendable. And so we are here on Monday after a whole lot of to and fro between President Trump and his chief of staff, General Kelly, and the grieving family of this young man, LaDavid Johnson, were busy crying their eyes out and trying to figure out what's next after his funeral this weekend. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Yes, good afternoon, Lucrece. I hope you had a beautiful weekend. My first question is, now the troops that was in Niger, were those Donald Trump's troops or were those leftover troops from Barack Obama? That's something, number one, that I think we need to clarify.
Well, there is no such thing. There should be no such thing as leftover troops. And this is part of what your question hints at. We need to know what happened there. Was there a transfer of authority and troops from President Obama to President Trump? If so, how did that happen and when did that happen? And still, Congress needed to be notified. I should think we don't have leftover troops.
Well, one would say it would be a continuation of the war.
No, I know what you mean.
Against
but I'm
terror.
Saying that, I know exactly what you mean. I think that people would tend to look at it that way. Since they were there, they have, let's say, maybe they have a 5-year assignment or a 3-year assignment. So if the presidency changes, there is what you just called a continuation. But according to the law, as I understand it, each reassignment, when a president takes office, they still have to follow the old standing procedures. And there are standing procedures that require consultation with Congress, that apprise Congress of what's going on. Why is the United States there, still there, and to seek permission, advice and consent, in a way,
yes,
of Congress?
Because
that's why they're there.
Yeah, because this is how the narrative in this whole situation is going to move forward, because I don't think most Americans truly know why we were there at Nigeria and what we were doing there. And it seems that we wasn't even fully prepared to be there, and that the French were supposedly there to assist and help protect us because of certain restrictions, and that they wasn't there doing it. And also, from what I have, you know, heard, that, you know, they basically left the gentleman there by not doing the proper body count, and that the proper tools and things were not in the there at the rescue mission. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that now this is their Benghazi. But, you know, basically all of this is going to be swept under the bridge, that there's not going to be a true investigation because of this psychopath that's in office. It's just sad the manner in which this man has treated this young woman that lost her husband. To hear her say that this individual couldn't even speak his name just goes to show the lack of character of this so-called leader of the free world. I mean, it's absolutely morally disgusting, and it shows that the American people have real serious issues that they are facing with him in office. Because the decent thing would be is to just apologize and to say that maybe I was wrong and maybe there was a basic misunderstanding on both of our parts, and let's just move on. But it seems like he has to double down and then bring in Kelly, who just shows that he's not even an honorable soldier by acting and behaving in such a cowardly way towards the officer of the state, the woman from Florida, by basically lying on her.
Congresswoman Wilson.
Lying on her and then getting caught in the blatant lie, and then Huckabee Sanders trying to double down on the lie, just goes to show how morally and immoral these people are. And it's like, it's okay, we'll just move on. And it's just sad, man. I just feel for the young lady, but most of all, I feel for the other soldiers who have to go about the business of having a leader like this wingnut in the office and putting their lives at risk for a country that, if you're of color, they don't even respect you or appreciate you dying from them. How about black people wake up and no longer go into the service as long as this clown is at the head of this country? I think people
well, thank
of color
you for getting us started today. Thanks for getting
day.
Us on the roll. And we'll see how people feel about your comments. You're on the air. Hello, you're on the air. Jose? Okay.
Hello?
Jose, are you on the air?
Yes, I'm here. Okay. I'm here, my professor. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, not
what
bad.
Are your
I
thoughts?
Hope all is well with you.
Yes, so far, so good.
Good, good, good. Now, my major concern is about what is happening on the African continent. I thought we had these fellows from the Black Congressional Caucus, I like to refer to them as. I thought that they were our voices in the system to let us know what is happening, so we can have a better understanding of the assault that is taking place on the African continent. I'm kind of tired of this war on terror, because the real terrorists are these westernized nations, the United States and France and Britain and all these countries. These are the perpetrators of terrorism, and they are creating what is happening in the world, the displacement of people all over the world. On the African continent, there are all these foreign troops on the continent. And I can't understand, what is the African Union doing? What is the Black Congressional Caucus doing? Where are the African activists? We hear nothing about what is happening to African people. Just this carnage is just taking place. The United States seems to think that they can put all these bases all over the African continent and the British and the French seem to think they can do the same thing. The Israelis have their people all over the African continent. And all these nations are on the continent. What is happening to our people? Who is standing up for us? And when are we going to stop and say, we have to have all these foreign troops out of the African continent and let Africa try and get its problems together? This is my concern.
Well, I'll say this. What is your argument when people say it is necessary, because number one, many African nations themselves are inviting these foreign forces, and number two, the enemy that they now have in common is a jihadist enemy, willing to fight all of them and willing to kill all of them? It's a very complicated situation. So how do you respond to that?
I cannot see the United States and Britain and France and so forth and the aspirations of African people being on the same page. I cannot comprehend that. No, you cannot convince me that we have the same issues and we have the same common enemy, all right? And as far as these African leaders, these charlatans that are there on the continent that is willing to sell their people out, they are not there for the interests of the African people. And those are the collaborators that are working with these Western governments, and they're not there for us. And somehow we have to find ways of getting them. I used to like what was happening in South Africa at one time when these traitors would be given the necklace. And the people have to find ways of dealing with these charlatans. Because if we can't, they will continue to sell us down the river. Their filthy lucres, their pieces of silver that they get from the oppressors, it is not even invested in their country. It is in American banks and British and Swiss banks and so forth. And so they can afford to do the things that they're doing to our people. When the going gets too hot, they can leave the country, and they all have their funds is in America and France and all those places. So the people, we have to start discussing these issues. I haven't heard anywhere around the place where we're discussing what is happening on the African continent and the interests of African people. There's nothing going around. Elombe Brass and all those brothers are gone. And so there's nobody around discussing these things. The Black Congressional Caucus is not there for the interests of our people, and neither are the people, these African leaders on the continent. So where do we turn?
So do you think now, because there is this complicating factor, I get where you stand with regard to the foreign forces, military forces, pretty much invading, but under the guise that it's helping, because many African nations themselves have petitioned for help. Okay.
Yes.
Now, you also have the reality that these terrorist groups of different names, whether it's Al-Shabaab or ISIL or ISIS or all the different names, they are, in fact, intent on taking all of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fight them?
I believe that we have to spend some time on the diplomatic front and trying to reach a common understanding among some of the groups. I know it's going to be difficult, but I personally believe that if the Western powers are given the go-ahead to continue to do what they are doing, Right, by the time they claim that they solved this terrorism problem, the whole of Africa, the African continent, the people will be wiped out. There will be so much carnage and destruction all over the land. What will be there for us to build on? Because the America and Britain and these places, they have no qualms about dropping bombs. These real bombs of mass destruction all over the continent. Because it's not their people, they don't see our people as human beings. That is why this young brother went off on this misguided effort under the guise of fighting for democracy and so forth. That is why he got killed and in his ancestral homeland. He shouldn't have been there in the first place. He had no right to be there on this continent fighting on behalf of the imperialist forces. He shouldn't have been there.
Well, I appreciate your point of view. We still have so many dimensions to deal with in this situation. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're talking today.
Yes.
So that we could find somewhere that we could all meet up and, you know, and take a piece of the puzzle at a time and look at it. Because this is not going to go away at all. It's not going to go away at all. Africa has always been under the gun, literally, of invasions by foreign forces. We have the question, and it's going to be a very dicey one, of the Arab factor in Africa and the aggression. I mean, they are absolutely committed to subjugating the continent to their will.
How committed are we?
Well, this is part of all the things that we have to consider here. Mm-hmm. Because you have corrupt regimes, you have weak regimes, you have regimes that never imagined having to have a military defense force this big to contend with the massive invasion of various countries. Yes. You have the colonial powers who do not intend to cut the ties with their former colonies because there is so much wealth there.
Yes.
And you have groups that should be indigenous to the continent. I'm referring specifically to the African Union.
Yes.
This is what Muammar Gaddafi had tried to organize.
Bless his
a
heart.
Continent-wide military defense system. Yes. So everybody, a guy with four guns, is as capable of causing havoc as a huge military contingent from the United States. The idea is they're disrupting life. They're just hell-bent on taking the continent and by brute force. So this is not an easy problem to solve. But you got us on that tack. Let's see who joins in with you.
Thanks I'm not a woman in the United States.
Thank you for calling in. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, good afternoon
to
you.
You know, as I think about this subject we've been talking about, what comes to mind is from this side, we need to stop calling these criminals that operate over here in the so-called Defense Department. We ought to return it to its correct name, which is War Department. And I think that's important. This has nothing to do with the defense of the United States at all. This is all wrapped up in the capitalist, imperialist operation that this country is involved in. Now, you know, when colonialism ended, people have to get it in their head that neocolonialism took over. So, you know, some of us talk about these independent former colonial countries that were released from the 1894-1895 Berlin Conference, made into colonies, and then later, after the Second World War, they became quote-unquote independent. have never been independent. The people who have taken over have to toe the line, and John Perkins made that very clear in his book, The Confessions of the Economic Hitman. You go along with the program or you become toast. So these countries are not independent. And once you get in a military contingent from the imperial countries, you are well in check. If you don't go along with that, you are at risk. If you go along with it, you become a very rich person. So, you know, that is the important thing to notice. And when you look at the people in the U.S. Army and the U.S. military, in the lower ranks, you have a proliferation of people who they don't care about. Many of them are poor people in the society. And they go in there and in the military, and being that you don't have a draft, a very small percentage of the people that live in the country have to send their people to the military. I mean, the point is the people who are going over there in the army, they're not benefiting from the riches that the oligarchs who run these corporations are making by all the projects they have in a place like Africa with resources, with mining, and billions of other involvements in things to make money, especially from the national resources in those various countries. So that is what that we should all know. So when people to say to me things, I'm a veteran, so they say, oh, thank you for serving and your
thank
contribution.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But the point is, the service in the military is serving the needs of imperialism. And, you know, people get that in their head. You're not defending the country by going over and getting yourself involved in all kind of danger and being killed yourself or going and kill other people, other poor people just like you. Yeah, no, that is no good. And people ought to get that into their head. That's not defending the country. That's defending imperialism. And we ought to be very, very clear at that. And a lot of us are not. We don't understand the system that we're in. Another thing, When it comes to things like so-called terrorism, no one counts what the United States and other European powers have done in those other countries. We're going over there bombing people, killing people left and right, and the people who we call terrorists, that's the only way they have of striking back. They don't have the bombers and fighter planes and all the equipment we have to go over there and do anything to us, to come here and do things to us, but they have the ability to strike back in that way. So that is to be recognized. They're not doing those things because they necessarily want to do them, but this is their way of retaliating for imperialism and the destruction that has been done to their communities. And we have no business having thousands of military bases, floating bases like aircraft carriers and whatnot. What are we going around the world trying to send these military people to keep the people with the resources in check? And I think that is something that everybody needs to get into their head.
Could you recall a time in the United States and outside of Africa generally when developments like this netted or yielded a very affirmative response by African Americans?
Okay. During the period of the civil rights movement, all the negative things that the system that was set up after Bacon's rebellion, of white supremacy racism and was in full effect, and in some degrees is in effect today. But the civil rights movement during the 50s and 60s, and that was a reaction to the things that were done to the people who were victim of white supremacy racism in this country. I mean, which is still going on. It just takes different forms. But the point is that this is somewhat of a reaction to that type of oppression that has been done in this country.
I was thinking specifically of Garvey's movement.
Yes.
In support of African nations generally. I was thinking of his movement supporting Ethiopia.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
But, so what has happened between that time and this time when you are noticing, and you did note, the apparent fragmentation of galvanized support in Congress with the Black Caucus,
and
other places with this, with so-called civil rights groups who seem to have just taken themselves out of the street altogether.
When you mentioned Black Caucus, many of those people, those black folks or Negroes in the Congress, to me, this is me speaking. I think they're just getting part of the action. They're just glad to have an opportunity to be elevated to a piece of the action. In other words, they're getting in on the action. They're not about changing this system. They're not about changing imperialism. They're not about doing what is good for the masses of people here. They're about getting a little action for themselves, getting on the payroll and whatever they have to do to elevate themselves economically and help out some of the people they know. But I don't think most of them are about changing the system. They're spending their time worrying about the Russians and all kinds of stuff like that. Really, I don't hear them talking about being against imperialism. I understand they have their big soiree every fall where they have all these corporations sponsoring them. How are you going to have American corporations sponsoring you, and you're going to be against imperialism and the things those corporations stand for? So the Black Caucus, I don't see much hope in that.
Well, so we have a very bad scenario developing here. We don't have a groundswell of intervening support here in the U.S. or anywhere elsewhere in the African world. And we have the problem that within Africa itself, it's so fragmented that the door seems to be wide open for anybody to just come in and do whatever they want. And what they've been wanting to do is to raid the entire continent of its riches, set up camp, take the land, which is, we should not exclude that as a very important part of the objective here, apart from subjugating the people in the case of the Arab world that is involved in terrorism and subjugating people, and the African version of the Arab world. It is a mess. So
it's been in full effect. Look what's happening in the Congo, where the United States and the European powers and China and whatnot are going into the Congo and stealing resources, and the Congolese people are not getting anything out of it. So, I mean, this is about resources, and they're going to do everything they can to divide people up and pay off the right folks and rob the resources as much as they can to enrich themselves, and that's what's happening. So, you know, it's a very difficult situation we have because there are lots of people that are very afraid to resist. Anybody that resists so-called Western imperialism is at real risk. And John Perkins tells us all that. He says, they tell you, well, you go along with the program or you're toast or the jackals will get you. And those who have read the book understand that. Those jackals will do you in if you don't let them have your resources. That's
so, well,
the way
let's see,
I see it.
Let's see what develops this week, whether we learned anything new and substantive in terms of what is exactly the U.S. doing in Niger and in other places, and how many other places are they performing like that?
Amen.
We've got to get down to the nitty-gritty. Thank you for calling and contributing today.
Thank
888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we're talking about developments in Niger on the backside of an ambush on October the 4th that killed four U.S. soldiers, and that now raises a question, serious questions, about what the United States is doing there. What is it that needs to be known? Why don't we know it? And in the end, what is our duty as citizens to influencing something in the way of change here? Because we constantly see the same pattern playing out all over the world. It's the poor and the working class doing the killing and doing the dying. And under Donald Trump, obviously this isn't changing. When a president says, well, as part of his version of comfort and consolation, when he says, well, he knew what he signed up for in reference to LaDavid Johnson, the young man who was buried over the weekend. I made a reference last week about systems, how they think, how they operate, and the absolute necessity for us as citizens to develop systems, to deal with those systems. The reason that the president can talk to the widow that way of this young man, saying, well, he knew what he signed up for, speaking in a, you know, I don't care kind of very, very loose manner, not recalling the young man's name, not recalling his wife's name, and speaking this way, showing great disrespect. It's the story of two cultures. They don't have any idea about the culture of the people who are doing the killing and the dying. Khalid from South Carolina, you're on the air.
How are you, Therese? How are you doing today?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm okay. Trying to keep my head up. So the question, exactly, what are we doing over there? I was kind of stunned when high-ranking congressmen did not know what we were doing over there. You know, high-ranking Republicans that who are, you know, on committees where they're supposed to know. But and I'm really glad you let me in today, because this really, for the past few days, I've been thinking about something that you said back in the summer when I called in one day and you were talking about, you made a comment. Well, And he was very low-key about it. He said, well, you know, it appears that the generals are in control. And I really didn't get it. I started talking about General Westmoreland. I mean, it was appropriate to what we were talking about. But I think what you were intimating was that the current president doesn't have the intellectual tools to perform the duties. So, you know, and it's comforting on one hand, maybe, okay, the guy's crazy. He's not well mentally. He needs supervision. So we have generals, but after this Kelly incident, I don't have a good feeling at all, because he has surrounded himself.
Consider this: this has been the case, I would say, even under the Obama administration. President Obama was a hostage. This is also a hostage president, and the military has been running things surreptitiously, doing whatever it is they want to do. And because the presidents, both presidents, had been and still are compromised, they are personally compromised.
Mm-hmm.
They understand what the deal is. The military gets everything it wants, these generals who are running things. They now have gone visibly into the administration. I mean, your chief of staff is a four-star general. And the key questions relating to foreign policy, certain domestic policies, the budget allocations, who gets to be cut so that the military budget is to be increased, local policies, even like, you know, establishing military rule, the militarization of law enforcement. All these things have been the outgrowths of the military control of the presidency. There's big money here, too, for the generals, and they like the idea of living very nicely. But bear in mind, Obama was totally a hostage of the generals, and despite the fact that he acts the way he acts, like he's in charge, Donald Trump is completely owned by the military.
I have no doubt about that now. That's why I'm somewhat subdued right now. I don't know what, you know, and it's an awful thing because we got these defense contractors. They're conducting policy without the consent of the American people.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
So,
they used to have the decency to remain in the shadows while they did their thing, but they have become emboldened, I would say, starting with the presidency of Barack Obama, and totally outrageously emboldened under Donald Trump.
Have you seen the writings of Peter Dale Scott?
No.
You have?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason I ask is that the Trump administration and campaign and entity has co-opted the term deep state, because what that's really referring to is...
Yes, I believe in the term itself. It's an applicable term. It's the deep state.
I mean, and it's just people who want to go to work every day, regardless of who's in charge, and they do the work, because the president's a part-time employee. You got people who are in there and conducting policy. And see, I think that dovetails maybe with what you're talking about, you know, with the generals, because it's a whole other set of society, and it's running things. And I think that kind of coincides with what David was saying from Brooklyn, you know, and so we just have to wake up. I think we really have to wake up now, because This is passed out of hand, and that picture of the soldier's widow kissing the casket, that picture, I think, is going to go down. That's going to be one of the most powerful pictures of this presidency.
You know, it's like all of her life just went out of her too. You know, she just collapsed like that. And, you know, it says something. There's a whole other story, which we'll get into at another time. This is a silent story that remains untold. We have always had a record in the African-American community of great patriotism, people would say, despite the fact that African-Americans were despised and treated so poorly. But they have had a great sense of loyalty to their country and have done their fair share, more than their fair share of dying. That's for sure. And then you look, this guy's 25 years old. And literally just beginning a life. If you read some of his background, you see he did not have a great start in life. And neither did his wife. Her mother died early.
Right.
So, I mean, you have stories that are not told because they literally tell the story of bravery and devotion and good character. And these things are not at all to be associated with black people.
No, so this story is not going away.
Stories, you know.
It's not going away. And you know, this story is so rich because it touches on the past, the present, and what is supposed to be the future of America and its population and people of difference. You know, because we got the black soldier, and then, remember, it was four soldiers, and we're not even talking about the other ones now because, right. You know, of course, Trump messed that up. You know, he stepped in it. He started this. And people need to remember that congresswoman was a mentor. She does what a real congressperson is supposed to do.
Correct.
You know, she was setting up things, and that needs to be pounded into people's minds. It's a fact. It is not fake news. It's not like she was trying to take advantage of that situation. And I know you got to go maybe, but I really resent the press person, the hillbilly harlot, the Arkansas Antoinette, when she said, you cannot, I don't think you want to dispute what this four-star general is saying. When I don't, you know, I'm telling you, I kind of know Kelly's background. You know, he's what you call a northern cracker from, you know, South Boston. That's like South Philly. You know.
Yes, but you know what? He is right there now in the White House, keeping tabs every minute of the day on what the president is doing, what he's thinking, where he's going. And having veto power. So I'm saying that the march of the generals is now directly into the White House. They used to keep a distance and not show their hands this boldly. But now they are in the White House. Trump can't do a thing without being monitored. And he's a hostage president.
Do you feel the drumbeat of war in the mainstream, in regular press, like the things we probably don't watch anymore, like CBS, NBC? I hear it, I'm hearing the drumbeat of war.
Oh, yes, you hear it. And that, I think, has been a long-term plan. This began with Barack Obama, and he never put up a fight. Because they had a lot of him, a lot of baggage, I should say, on him. They still do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of baggage on Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no question that the military, the generals, a select group, are executing the plan, and there's another group coming up with the plan. And they're working hand in glove, and they're literally running the country. And we don't see that. They're in charge.
It almost looks like when many of the former colonies in Africa became independent, and then all of a sudden it was a mess because of a lot of reasons. But in other words, the juntas, you know, you had the generals taking over. It's like, why is this general in charge of this country?
Right.
You know, when you're a young person, you really don't understand that, you know, if you're growing up in the 60s, 70s, whatever, it's not explained to you. You almost have to, you have to search out that knowledge.
Well, I tell you, if we take the time to see the march of the generals, especially from the Obama administration to now, there is no doubt that there has been, well, I could say a soft coup. It has it has already happened. They've taken over. To the point where it should alarm people. It should have alarmed the nation that the chief of staff is next to the president right there in the White House.
No,
everywhere Trump
that.
Goes, he goes. He even banned Donald Trump's children from stopping by to say hello.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're in
but
trouble.
Thank you for calling. We've come to the end of the program today. We've used up our time. And we will continue this discussion because it's going to be very, very important, not from the point of view so much as to what we will learn, but from the point of view as to what we intend to do about it.
Have
because it's
day.
Not enough just to learn what is happening. It is important to interpret these developments as yet another warning to get our act together. We're so fragmented. Thank you so much for your call today. Thank you, everybody, for your calls. Very thoughtful opinions. And we will continue the discussion coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs